Hey, Joe.
Hey.
You're supposed to say, hey, what?
Am I in the wrong script? Hey, what?
No, we're improvising, silly.
I'm terrible at improvising.
Why have just one conversation when you could have conversations about conversations around conversations?
Exactly. Which is why we created Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations. What is so funny?
Keeping it in. It's real good.
All right. But that's exactly right, which is why we created Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations. So this is a podcast to continue that conversation. Every week on Clubhouse, 12:55 Eastern, if you want to come hang out, we have these amazing discussions with these wonderful people that sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with so many more thoughts than we had time to get into. So we decided to share those and reach even more of y'all. So hey, I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater and film and the internet. And I love creating all of that stuff, watching it, and of course, talking about it.
And I'm Joe, co-founder with Jess of Broadway Unlocked, and a former tech startup-y guy, but always loving those conversations about the intersection of technology and storytelling. And that's what brought Jess and I together.
See, you just improvised. What a great job you just did.
Yes, and...
with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays, where we start conversations around the conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app about 2 hours ago. This week, we discussed the financial side of theater reopenings, how there's a possibility of smaller players thriving post-pandemic, and how we can continue to strive for change in our industry and all the connected systems, which it might surprise you to know. All of those things were inspired by the article Lucy pulled for us about the Fast and Furious franchise saving movie theaters, because our brains are terrifying places and we talk and we wander through their hallways at Clubhouse. It was pretty great.
Fast and Furious has been saving the cinema franchises for years and years.
I know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
New
this
news.
Isn't a new development.
It's so true. Well, if it's any consolation, we also spent a lot of time talking about an article in Protocol this week, which is one of my favorite tech newsletters that I read every day, called For Big Tech Whistleblowers, There's No Such Thing as Moving On. And that felt super connected to our conversation last week in Clubhouse about Scott Rudin and the powerful figures that uphold those systems. So lots to talk about. And Joe, you didn't get to join us till almost the end, so go ahead.
I know, I was only able to pop in with like 10 minutes left. And if you haven't been in a Clubhouse room in the middle of a conversation, it's super hard. So props to anyone who is running a room and resets it. I appreciate you.
Oh. I have to tell you, okay, I think I have so many things that were, I think, are interesting, but specifically, I think with you and I and the opportunity for us to talk, I really wanted to jump to the whistleblowers conversation really quickly, just because I feel like this is something we talk about internally quite often, and it felt really connected to our conversation last week about Scott Rudin. And sort of, I don't know, Lucy, what you thought. It felt like the conversation got quite heavy, I thought. Like, not in... It just felt heavy, you know? It was a great conversation. It was really productive, really interesting insight into what it means to, like, create an ecosystem of change and what it means to be a whistleblower. But it definitely felt like it was weighing heavily on everybody's hearts.
Well, I think potentially the reason that's the case is because I think so much of the focus of the article we were talking about, and therefore the conversation we had, was kind of around the personal pressure that comes with having to make those changes. Like, so often you feel like an individual fighting a much larger system that you don't have control over, and you have to kind of weigh all those personal pressures with making a large scale change, and it can feel very individual.
And that's like a room full of people who are always pushing change. So it was really personal, I guess. I hadn't thought about it that way.
But it's so hard to just like live in our society. Like, I feel like American society has forever pushed the narrative of like individualism and individual success and individual failure, unless you're a corporation, in which case, like, yeah, socialism, whatever. But I had never thought about it, that lens of like how isolating that is. especially in these sorts of moments where it's like, oh, actually there is a big group or a big collective or a big, group of people that have a shared sort of belief or set of values that like can't find each other and are like told and pushed to corners because of those values, because they're like technically outgroup values, even though they're like, you know, it's a big outgroup that shares those values. And then you're just like meant to feel like you're an outsider and isolated and alone, such that you can't challenge the in-group or challenge the dominant structure, or challenge the dominant culture.
Well, and
it's terrible.
Man, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but like, I'm only obviously, as we do best, referring it back to my own experience, but like long-term, the change or the way we choose as change makers choose to pursue that change, whether, I don't know if you were there, Joe, but I was talking about the different kinds of change that you can make and how I admire people who do are whistleblowers who change systems from within. Cause like, I just don't have that in me. And that change feels like meteoric, like wide blast radius, travels fast, like big explosive change. And like on my side of things, the kind of change like I have pursued in my life is slow moving and quiet and over a long period of time. And it, what you just said makes me think that like, at least only in reference to my own work and thinking about what you just said, it can't help but be isolating. Like who is going to stick with me, you know, in my kind of change for 20 years? You know, for, yeah, like with everything that like I've given up to continue to pursue that change. And if that's true for me, I mean, I just can't, I imagine it must be true for other people in different circumstances.
Oh, and the word you just used, giving up or given up, excuse me, like given up, like you had to sacrifice in order to exist outside the system and try to either go some other direction or change that system or build your own thing such that, you know, you have a competing system that people can choose to operate inside of or go toward. Mm-hmm. And that itself is so risky. You as an individual had to give up working inside of the system and the safety, the security, all the good that does, you know, good, quote unquote, that comes, yeah, from that, the safety of being part of that in group. You had to give it all up. And that's a huge thing to risk and a huge thing to ask of someone. And why, yeah, it puts even more pressure on that individual whistleblower to be like, hey, you're bearing the burden of all of our sins. Like, thank you for, right, stepping up onto the cross.
Like, there's no possible world where the outcome, that article that you posted for us to talk about or whomever brought it up, Lucy, there's no possible world where that's like a group effort. Like, it is just maybe a couple people walk with you, but it will, and it's only for a moment, right? You, as the person who chose to affect that change in whichever way you chose, like, you have to live with all of the knock-on repercussions.
My brain just jumped to sort of the unionization effort that has been happening.
In tech
and media and publishing is actually where my brain jumped to, with like the Vox Medias of the world and Spotify pushing for union, Gimlet Media specifically in Spotify. Mm-hmm. And then the efforts in the Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, and like all of those. And because I was like trying this whole time to be like, okay, there's got to be some example of not just one person being like on the hook or the change agent or the scapegoat or the whatever just by themselves. Like, are there not other structures that we can either build or support or look to for inspiration? And my head jumped to unions and unionization, like the collective energies and actions of people with the shared values that are those outgroup values coming together to challenge in a collected way the structure that they exist within, and how union is literally the only one I could come up with.
Oh, that's so funny. I have a peripheral thought to that, though, that I didn't, like, now I'm connecting to what you said, but that's not the original reason I had that thought. When I left Clubhouse today after that conversation, I was thinking a lot about our friend Shireen, our new friend Shireen that we made on Clubhouse, who is an incredible actress and change maker in her own right. Many months ago, at a Clubhouse talk, she said, what do we do after we go back to our real lives? Like, how can we keep having these conversations? And today, I thought a lot about like, oh, this is a little bit of what you were just describing, Joe. Like, I saw for the first time, because we've tried a whole bunch of stuff inside Clubhouse, but I saw for the first time what this could, the space this could be as we go back to working and going back to our lives, because it is becoming this place to have incredibly difficult, challenging, curious conversations with other people who make change. You know what I mean? Like, that's just like how this keeps shaking out every week. And that's pretty incredible given what you just pointed out, I think, that you might, maybe we're going to be able to create a space for people to feel a little less like they're in the fight themselves.
Yeah. I wonder, like, throwing it back to you on that, what do you think about the space that gets made inside of Clubhouse and inside of our club on Clubhouse allows for that? Because I feel like there's a lot of fear going into any conversation like that. And it takes, you know, someone being brave and taking the risk, but also feeling like it's worth taking that risk.
I'm just speaking off the top of my head, but I suspect it's like actually a puzzle of things. I think it starts, if I had to just like roll off what has happened in the last couple of weeks, right? Like in this format with talking about the news, I think it starts with you, Lucy, and the sort of lens that you bring to picking the article out and like the way you framed it up today. Do you know what I mean? And even though I think like it moved away from what I understood your original sort of curiosity around the topic to be, which, by the way, if you ever want to talk about that, I'm fucking fascinated with it. So like, let's chat. But
what's the that?
Yeah, I'll let Lucy talk about it because you're the one who did, I don't want to paraphrase your beautiful and amazing words.
Well, the article I read that made me curious was, like you mentioned, about the new Fast and Furious movie saving movie theaters. And the reasoning behind that is that historically, that type of movie, the action summer blockbuster event movie, has reliably gotten audiences into theaters. And so it made me curious about the applications of that type of thinking in theater and whether there is sort of an equivalent, something that's like a franchise or like a guaranteed moneymaker. And if that exists in theater, or if there's a type of show or a particular show that we could look to as a similar marker of success coming back from the pandemic.
So to your question, Joe, like when I like start to break down just even the permission structure around the beginning of a conversation, I'm looking at a topic that crosses industries, like that says we have to be inspired by other things than what we do. That's curious, that kind of drew some really bonkers like things together into one idea. I think it all starts with that. And then I think beyond that, moving beyond that, it's those people in the room who are willing to really ask a lot of questions of each other and bring a lot of, we had especially today, a lot of very different lenses, I think. Like the folks up on stage they come from very different backgrounds, very different lenses. And so like the composition of the room matters. And then I think beyond that, the people who just sat and listened the whole time, which I was saying to you is really the first time that's happened, I think, or maybe the second time, but it doesn't happen frequently, where like a lot of people stayed the whole time just listening. Like, I think like they're then, right? They're part of that processing and they're part of that brave space that you're asking about. So I don't know. I just think similar to change, the way we were talking about change needing to be an ecosystem of different mechanisms and methods. Like, I think the same thing goes into creating a space, like what we are hoping to create.
Yeah, I love the idea too that those people who were hanging out, listening, and that was me for the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes of that conversation, are now having conversations elsewhere. They're continuing their own conversation that may or may not be recorded on a podcast. We'll find out. hit us up on Twitter, hashtag TechTheaterCH. But the idea that they're continuing those conversations, being like, hey, I heard this crazy, like amazing conversation on Clubhouse and it got me thinking. Onward to the next conversation and the chain reaction that comes from it.
Oh, and that's so fundamentally theater, right? Like I was thinking the other day, we were talking about like, I saw what the Constitution means to me a few years ago. And my friend Michael and I stood in the subway for like an hour. We let so many subways go by because we couldn't stop talking and asking questions of this play. That's like the Brecht, right? Like that sort of mechanism of like ask questions to make other people ask more questions and have more conversations and inspect what they think is such a fundamentally theatrical sort of skill set and goal that I love that it is in what we do on Clubhouse.
I love that. Have I ever introduced this framing to you? I can't remember the guy's name. James P. Carr, I think. He's an author and he wrote this book called Finite versus Infinite Games. Mm-mm. And it just got me thinking about it. But like a finite game is like a soccer match, right? It's like there's a score, there's a winner, there's a loser, it ends. But an infinite game is like soccer as a concept, or like the Major League Soccer program, or like the Premier League in the UK. And like the goal of that game is to keep the game going for as long as you possibly can and never let it stop. So mm-hmm. It's like keep it going, keep it going, keep it going is the name of the game. So it's not about winners. It's not about losers. It's about keeping the dang thing going. And just how you described that right there, it's like, oh, like this is all an infinite game. Like we're just trying to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, I paused because I was just thinking, I think I look at my life like that. Like, I wonder if that's connected to, I recently got into a conversation about like failing and the concept of failing. And like, I don't really fail at things, but that's my perception of it. And I think it's because I look at like my life and everything as an infinite game, you know? I don't know. I just have never heard that concept. That's really interesting.
It's one of those that I come back around to all the time. I'm like, oh, this is an infinite game. Like, stop treating it like a finite game.
Was there any kind of, like in that concept or the way that James Carr sort of outlines it, is there pros and cons, pluses and minuses? Like what's the point of defining those two different things for him?
Oh God, I have no idea. I don't remember at all.
Oh, okay.
Like the core thesis being like, know which one you're in because it's going to inform the actions you should take. Because either you're trying to beat the person that you're talking to or up against, or you're trying to engage with and collaborate
right,
with.
Right, now that seems obvious.
Interface with. Got it.
I just missed that.
No, I'm sure that what your question is, like it's like a 150-page book. I'm sure there's more in it than just those words I said aloud.
Huh.
But yeah, and the idea that like that should be, and how I got here in my own head as you were talking was, oh, like conversation after a show, like as a metric of success, and how we currently think about, you know, just times, people spending time with us and how much time they're spending with us across the virtual events that we are putting on and helping our clients create. Mm-hmm. And one of the metrics that we look at is just how long are people spending with us? And it's like hours upon hours of time. And like that is a measure of success. It's like, look, they're hanging out with us. They're interested. They're talking with each other. They're learning things. They're doing stuff for 3 hours. And time spent as a measure of success and conversations had as a measure of success.
That's a crazy KPI like framework. You know, we talk a lot about like, oh, do we want to spend money on like targeted ads or do we want to spend money on like content? And it is a crazy KPI to say, like, to start looking at that as all connect as an infinite game and say that thing that you just said, look how long they stay with us in our virtual venue at a show. Well, like our marketing efforts or whatever it is, if this is the direction we go, look at how long they spent with us, includes the Clubhouse conversation, the podcast, coming to it's like an infinite, it isn't, no, I'm not trying to co-opt your concept here, but like it's an infinite game as far as I can understand. And I kind of love that.
I like it. It's helped me to understand you better, that you view everything as an infinite game.
Oh my God.
Like it just broke my own brain.
You remember when the other day I was like, I said yet another thing that you didn't understand, because that's always how I am. And I was like, I hate when you say I don't understand things, because it's really a me feeling really, I'm not going to say ashamed, but like there is a piece of me that hates that my brain's hard to understand, or the way it gets out of my mouth is really hard to understand. Today in Clubhouse, it happened again. I had like an association with this great South Park episode where they were like making governmental decisions by throwing a chicken with its head cut off into the thing. And Natalie was like, I literally didn't understand one thing that just came out of your mouth. I was like, that's fine. I know what I think is awesome about this. So fuck off, everybody.
I'm so glad it didn't have to be me. And two, I feel like we just need to find you a new medium, right? It's like, okay, words aren't working. Words aren't working. Get her some watercolors.
That's why I'm a good actor and a good director, because I can just say someone else's words and make all the feelings come out. Jesus Christ. You know what is super sad? I used to consider explaining things like the thing I was worst at, and I am so much better at explaining what's in my head now than I used to be. You just should feel lucky you didn't know me 5 years ago.
All right, point taken. I feel very lucky. I'm gonna bring this up the next time this situation happens.
Oh my God. Oh, 5 minutes till we wrap up. I was going to ask you about franchises. God damn it.
Franchises. Wait, can I throw a thing out? So it was something that came up near the end of the conversation, like basically when we had 5 minutes left in Clubhouse.
Whoa.
And there, I can't remember exactly how it came into, oh, we were talking about shame. And shame is a mechanism for change.
Mm.
And how, well, at least my lens on it right now is like, oh, shame seems to be working less and less, especially in our like current political climate. And I was like, why is that? Like, why isn't shame, doesn't have shame have the same amount of power over someone like a Donald Trump and all of his acolytes? And I was like, oh, like shame is based on a shared value system, shared value structure, right? Like in order to feel shame, you have to believe somewhere deep down inside that you are doing something wrong or bad or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so if like the person shaming you or calling you out on something, right, the basis of which you just don't even agree with, you're like, I just don't even agree with the premise of the shame. So therefore, mm-hmm. I do not feel shameful. Like, mm-hmm. I don't believe that, you know, this, you know, type of human being is a human being or whatever. I don't even know what example I'm trying to get into now. But that we're like, we've lost certain shared values, or like American values have not expanded. I don't know exactly where I'm going with it, but just the idea of shared values as like a necessary factor in shame, and how have our shared values gotten lost along the way such that like shame as a mechanism no longer really is working?
Well, here's what I would toss back to you on that we didn't get into but was on my mind while we were talking about this. And this is sort of back to that you need an ecosystem of change. I'm not sure, I don't think you said this, by the way, but like I'm not sure that the lens that shame doesn't work because we don't is then connected to we don't have shared values and that's a problem, because I think about it from the perspective of survivors of violence, which I spend a ton of time working on and have learning about, right, and sort of like all the things anyway, and shame is a huge part of that. And there's like this totally positive side of that, right, where like especially in work with survivors of violence where you say I accepted your premise and that premise was actually false. Mm. And I can't accept it. And I don't have to accept that I'm not supposed to tell anyone if I'm a survivor of violence, right? Or that I can't speak about it or that people aren't going to like me. And in fact, it like is a really, really net positive sort of the breakdown of a shared value in that instance is so net positive, because shame is actually such a negative forcing mechanism for instance survivors of violence. So I don't know, like I what it makes me think is like, man, shitty that like shame doesn't seem to exist in that situation you just mentioned, but also like maybe just like the questioning part of share the idea even of shared values at all might just be necessary for our culture, and there's some collateral damage out of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But thank you for engaging me on that, because I didn't know where I was going with it, and I appreciate the perspective through the lens of survivors of violence.
You're welcome. What if I just like went silent after you said all that? It's like, we're not talking about this. I hope you feel ashamed.
I don't. We must not share the value.
I'm like kind of now I'm pissed. I'm like, you need to come up with what you think about what I just said, because I want to know what you think. Not right now. You can tell me later. Sorry, everyone who's listening.
Yeah, I'll add it to the list. It's funny where my head is actually at. It's like, how the fuck do we transition from this into like a closing? That's what I got frozen on, actually.
You
I was like,
are
oh,
nailing your host duties today. Super terrible. Nailing it.
Super terrible today.
Yeah, I think you got us there if you want to just go ahead and keep rolling on.
Oh, I hate that cop-out version. I feel like I've done that once before. Don't like it. Well, we'd love to hear what you have to think. I hate you so much right now.
I'm sorry. Kind of. Oh, man. I can't wait to hear you try that again.
But we really would love to hear what you think. So,
That was nice.
The conversation around conversations about conversations only happen if you keep the chain going. So join us on Twitter. You can tweet at us at BWY Unlocked. That's BWY Unlocked. And use the hashtag TechTheaterCH to share your thoughts.
And of course, come join us for our next conversation. We're on Clubhouse Tuesdays at 12:55 Eastern. Next week, if you're into theater, we're actually going to break the news format for 1 week because this is very timely. We're going to be talking about showcases, university showcases, casting directors, casting, and the future of that inside theater. We've got some casting directors, we've got some university professors, we've got some students who showcase this year, and it's going to be super, super juicy. So raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
And if you'd like to come moderate a show with us, you can pitch us your idea at broadwayunlocked.com/ch. And you get to talk to this really nice robo, Jess, where she'll critique your idea and make you feel bad about it.
Oh my God, someone get someone to reprogram that bot and me. Every week we talk about the news in technology and theater, which means that now every single topic we're talking about has been inspired by what we've read. So please tweet us at #TechTheaterCH, slide into our DMs, join in the conversation, and until then, see you next week.
Bye, everyone.